Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with RCR Greenwashed with Don and Jaspreet. And right now we're going to head into our climate crazy segment. And Jaspreet, you've got a wee sliver of gold for us to hear from our former Prime Minister.
Well, the sliver other side of gold. Of the planet. That's one way of describing it, Don. It's upon our listeners to what they think of it. But this is her speaking at the Leadership Forum, the Time Leadership Forum in New York, a couple of weeks ago. Here goes.
5 million people responsible for a tiny fraction of global emissions. How can small countries like yours lead the way on climate action?
You make an excellent point. You know, 0.17% of global emissions you can attribute to New Zealand. And when you break that down, roughly half of those for us are coming from food production and agriculture. The fact that cows burp is a significant problem for New Zealand. And yet it was, for us, the point that we were always trying to make in tackling our emissions profile was we have no place asking the rest of the world to do their part if we're not willing to do ours. And that is the issue that we face with the global challenge of climate change. If anyone opts out because their contribution is too small, at what point is the cutoff in place? And the second point for us was actually, as a country that has significant renewable electricity generation, you know, on a good day it's well over 80%, some of our low-hanging fruit is gone. We're tackling the hard stuff when it comes to, for instance, the contribution of methane to our emissions profile. But if we can start trying to tackle that now, then we're going to have intellectual property that is going to be useful to the world and to the world's food producers. So there is advantage to us doing our part as well.
Advantage to us doing our part, Don. Thoughts? Everyone talks methane now, Don, incidentally. Whatever happened to CO2?
Well, we've brought that up before, that all of a sudden, after 20-plus years, all of a sudden, methane's the new kid on the block. But we've been battling away here and investing hundreds of millions of dollars, by the way, looking for this IP that the former Prime Minister talked about that we're going to own. It's a bit rich, isn't it, when I see companies now that New Zealand taxpayers have actually done the base research for, and now monetizing it through private enterprise. How's that going to work? I don't see any IP sticking with New Zealand at all, unless there's some very good agreements somehow. But you know, the methane mitigation stuff, as they talk about mitigation, God, I hate that word. there's plenty of players in the world doing the same thing. But we're sort of told that we're so ahead of everybody else, and maybe we are if it's so important. But doesn't it grates my gears to see a person that's probably never lambed a ewe, carved a cow, foaled a horse, saying what we've done?
Yep.
I just struggle with it. It's so arrogant, in my opinion, and the sanctimony of that whole damn clip you've just played rankled me.
I'm sorry, Don.
Yeah, you've wound me up.
But see, the Methane Science Review Panel, it's still to put the judgment out, but a single source of truth has spoken that methane is really, really bad. Cow's burp is a problem. Yep. But hey, even if you still take the whole that the science is settled and half of our emissions come from animal agriculture, well, 50% of 0.17% is still negligible.
Yeah, and the saddest thing is, and look, you and I have talked about this, if around our animals, it's around efficiency drivers. And if the rumen can be made more efficient, fantastic. But it shouldn't have to have legislation to do it and encourage people. So I'm hoping, I am worried, actually, that this methane science review has got a preset end goal in mind. And is it going to be to maintain a status quo, or even if it reduces the metric, there's still going to be the foot on the throat of the animal production system in this country. And you know, by the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister's comments, she hopes that's going to happen around the world as well, by the sound of it. And it ain't going to happen. I think Denmark's the only one at this point that's looking like legislating it. So, look, great on the Methane Science Accord. Let's hope them and they get some backing, because I just don't see the uprising from the farmers of this country to sort of say, look, we need some common sense here by real people.
Yeah. By real people.
Sorry, I've gone way off track, as usual. But the Prime Minister, that whole clip winds me up, just like it winds me up that she's getting her damehood presented to her in the UK with Prince William and well, probably the King in the next few weeks.
But then she's the trustee on Prince William's charity, the One Earth Short Prize. So, birds of a feather and all of that.
I thought most people had their knighthoods and damehoods. You know, their investiture was done in Wellington in New Zealand. So,
Some are more special than others. But come on, let's lighten up the mood. Something crazy in the climate crazy now, Don.
All right. Well, look, I did find one that's, it hasn't got as big a bill as the New Zealand farmers would have if they were taxed for their methane, even if it was to offset the community's wider CO2 bill. But you wouldn't believe this. In the UK, the taxpayers are going to be asked to foot a bill, £200,000 study on Star Wars environmental impact and the carbon footprint of R2-D2. Now, I'd probably be the only person on the planet that never went to a Star Wars movie. Couldn't stand science fiction type stuff, and perhaps that's to my detriment, I don't know. But, you know, they're being asked to find the impact that filmmaking has. And not only that, the props for the movie. And so the project will examine the carbon footprint of props and costumes used during the films, including the sidekick R2-D2 and lightsabers. And of course, moreover, it was funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council in the UK, a body, taxpayer-funded body, to research things like this. It's been handed a budget of £207 million from 2022 to 2025. So this is small change. This is only £200,000. But it's found that 21 R2-D2s were made of sheet aluminium and fiberglass for the films between 76 and 98. And fast forward, they said that was the equivalent of 686 kilograms of CO2 equivalents. Heck, that's the end of the world stuff. Then in 2002, the film Attack of the Clones, this rose to 4,248 because of the droids that were made and the appearances there. So, you know, it's vital stuff.
Nothing is safe.
Cutting edge. God, hell, what was James Cameron doing? Did he do the Avatar movies? What was that called? Yeah, I've just forgotten all that. I don't even follow that. Shows you how out of touch I am.
No, so am I, but God.
But he's so virtuous, that character. He will have done his study. He wouldn't need £200,000 to do it. But doesn't it just show you there are people on the planet that are willing to waste the energy of other people's money, that generated the money through taxes? I think that's just nonsense. But this climate is crazy it is. Climate crazy it is.
Academia, that's where they are for you.
Well, the Net Zero Watch director, Andrew Montford, said, it has been clear for many years that climate change is being used as an excuse to deliver fast funding and academic jobs to a small army of pseudo-intellectuals. So almost parroting what you've just said, effectively.
Mm-hmm. Pseudo-intellectuals it is. Okay.
What's your next one?
To Australia, where one of Australia's oldest coal generators refused bank guarantees, operating status under threat, says the headline from Renew Economy website Australia. The spar generator is Wales Point B. It's owned by Delta Electricity, and it is cashed up. It meets all the parameters it needs, but it says now that it can't get banking finance when its current loan facilities expire at the end of 2024. Out of its 15-member banking syndicate, 13 have ruled out any finance at all because of ESG constraints, environmental, social, governance factors. Looking beyond your balance sheet, the triple bottom line, whatever you may call it, This includes Australia's four big banks, ANZ, CBA, NAB, and Westpac. Two other institutions did offer it some finance, but only in relation to mine rehab and renewable energy power purchase agreements. Delta has said that there's absolutely no appetite from most Australian lenders simply because of the association with thermal coal. So this is ESG now stopping productivity in the country, because I mean, I would call it debanking, which brings to mind the fact that we had Bryce McKenzie on here about a fortnight ago, Don. He spoke about the groundswell campaign called Back Off Banks, because farmers in New Zealand are now finding themselves constrained in terms of their lending, borrowing requirements, because again, some banks have these ESG metrics to meet because they have further on signed to the United Nations convened Net Zero Banking Alliance. And this thermal power generator in Australia is facing the same. So how many ways can you attack coal? You know, you call it bad, you talk about CO2, you call them environmental vandals, you debank them. Yeah, it is. It's getting very interesting.
Oh, it's fun times. Just the thin end of the wedge. But, you know, Jaspreet, I take my hat off to you and perhaps our show, to be honest. You first alerted me to this wedge that we're going into around the hindering or the coercive banking regimes. You will do the ticking of these boxes for your emissions profiles, your environmental reporting, your social reporting, all the reporting possible, or else you just will not get the finance. We talked about how there was going to be there was going to be discounts given to people that ticked the boxes. Sorry, it wouldn't be a discount. It would be a surcharge on top for the people that don't. And sadly, this is the thin end of the wedge. And you know, I always wondered, you know, years ago when I was trying to defend the property right for farming, why the banks never supported us when we went to local authorities and said, this rating regime is out of control. And all I got from banks is that they didn't want to get involved in politics. Well, what are they doing here? Stay clean, banks. Get out of all this stuff. Stay clean. Get in. Why do they hunt as a pack?
Because they are in a pack. The United Nations Net Zero Global Banking Alliance. Mm. They are a part of a pack and they've signed up to certain norms. Because, you know, it came from corporate social responsibility and banks closed for good. I remember that campaign out there planting, doing some native planting and all of that. I remember seeing that in the Waikato a decade and a half ago now. And I'm wondering what it was. And slowly, slowly, the dots start joining up. And
Well, and we get to all this point, and people, you know, we're getting to the pointy end, as I said, the wedge, and all hell's going to break loose because there's going to be people lose their livelihood. Sold up, cashed up, no funds. Mm-hmm. You know, people are going to lose their investments because no one's going to give them seasonal finance, perhaps, or the like. So we're in a very, very precarious place here, and we need some serious leadership about it that actually says this impact can't be as it looks. They have to start taking the foot off the brake and the foot off the throat of their borrowers. I don't know. Do they ask when you're depositing your money that you've ticked all the boxes?
Yeah, you know, you've done your ESG. They do in some cases, and especially if you're withdrawing cash, they do ask you questions. Where's this going? I know someone who got saucy enough to reply back saying, I'm going to spend it on wine, women, and song. Thank you very much. I will have my $10,000 out.
But think about this. If you want to go and deposit $10,000 to put on term deposit with them, do they ask you?
Ask you the source. They won't just accept cash easily these days.
No. You just got some investments and you just want to put in the bank. Do they say, we want to know that this money has come from ESG box-ticking investments? They don't. They want your cash. They don't care. When I say cash, I should say they want your revenue.
Your investment.
Investment. They don't ask those questions because if they did, they'd get told where to go. Yeah, yes. And that probably is what needs to happen on the other side of the ledger. But Jay,
talking of cash, I am certainly going to give you a plug-in for Alistair Harding's docuseries. If you haven't listened to his excellent 10-part series on CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, and what's ahead, may I urge you to do so. It is well worth your time.
Mm. Yeah, look, and I was in Invercargill the other day, and I said, look, do you take cash to the guy? Because he looked like he didn't. He said, hell yes. And I had to give him the old fist bump. Good man.
Right.
Anyway, what else have you got? You were going to go on to our summit in Sydney, weren't you? Now, yeah, what did they talk about there? The Global Nature Positive Summit. Did they get to the pointy end where it's about the monetization of nature?
It is part of where I spent my weekend. I can now remember why I just had a cup of tea and went home, because I spent a bit of time. Don and I mentioned this last week. Sydney played host to the world's first Nature Positive Summit between 8th and the 10th of October. And they are now talking of, that means it's already done and dusted and tied up with a pretty bow, about monetization of biodiversity, wetlands, and other assets and so forth. And I listened there to a few of the keynote speakers, and this is being done right now because towards the end of this month, 21st October to the 1st of November, is the United Nations Biodiversity Summit. That is only the 16th one, COP16 in Colombia. And this one is just to rejig and pretty much put a price on this, because they say the biodiversity market needs to go hand in hand with the carbon credit market. So if you thought carbon was where it is at, no, it is not. There is plenty more where that came from. And the lot that have done this are going ahead. There is now a website that you can look at. It's called naturalcapitalmeasurement.org. naturalcapitalmeasurement.org, which has a catalog of how they're going to be doing natural capital accounting. And I looked up some of the metrics on this one. So for soil, what are they going to do? They're going to see how much fertilizer is put on it. What is the temperature? What is the density of whatever you're producing on it? So say if it's beef or if it's crickets or if it's soybean, per, say, square meter of soil, how much are you growing? What is the output? And all of those matrices are going to be quantified. They're going to be monetized and probably going to be added to your ESG criteria that, hey, how well are you doing? So, you know, we spoke about the Mangatottery Reserve down around Cambridge, which there's a certain outfit that has been doing work there. They are going to be putting it on their balance sheet because they are earning some biodiversity credits. There are no free lunches. And I appreciate that there are no free lunches. But please stop pretending, big organizations, that you're doing some of this stuff for altruistic motives. You are not.
And do you want to see, and I know flew this kite last week or recently, that imagine if the conservation estate in New Zealand was valued the way this whole regime may take it. And then the New Zealand government of the time says, we're just going to raise a mortgage against that. Interesting. I just can't see there's not a lot of good going to come out of that.
We won't have to imagine it much longer, Don. If I go to the Department of Conservation website and search for biodiversity credits, up comes a paper, Biodiversity Credits, an Incentive to Support Conservation Efforts. For those who missed it, the consultation closed November 2023. They've been a good year in the making. And what you thought, imagine, Don, is going to be reality very soon. I'd like to see if anyone gets outraged when the, you know, millions of hours of volunteer hours of work and all the time and sweat and blood of people who have worked on it for nothing, just purely for the enjoyment of nature, suddenly gets valued on someone else's balance sheet.
Yep. And I flew that kite because I knew you'd come up with that information rapidly. I have a feeling we've talked about it more than once. But anyway, look, the Task Force on Nature-Related Financial Disclosures become a Task Force on Nature-Related Financial Disclosure adopter. And there's already 400 organizations in Australia or around the world doing it. I mean, you know, have you, just as an aside, you are an accountant. You've worked as an accountant. Has an accountant ever and a consultant ever said no to work because the legislation says, yeah, well, you've got to do that, and you say, no, we don't want to do it? Do you ever put your hand up and say no? I've never known.
And for listeners, I'm not a qualified accountant. Yeah. I have a degree, undergraduate degree in accounting, worked as a bookkeeper. Haven't gone beyond that. Kids and life kept me busy. But no, we find a way. That's why it's called creative accounting.
Yeah. No, it's all there. Do you know what I took out of that whole, and aside from everything we've just talked about, what I took out of it is Tania Plibersek, the Australian Minister for the Environment, is there Jacinda Ardern in waiting. She is looking, she is on the outer politically over there at the moment. Albanese has, she's humiliated him about the mining sort of issues that she's been given licenses to versus others. And I suggest she is on the way out and she will follow our former leader to some cushy number in the United Nations. That's my gut feel.
And they have some cheat talking about it when, again, a fortnight ago, we had Caroline Ems here from the Rainforest Reserve Australia, absolutely in tears about the fact that some of the best koala habitat bats and, you know, a few other protected species is going up for this green net zero nirvana, renewable energy projects that are cropping up across the Great Dividing Range. Nothing. Yeah. They keep going to these ministers. Suddenly biodiversity doesn't matter when it's money at stake. And then Australia has just hosted the world's first nature positive summit. So what do I know? You know, we need to really wind up the segment here. But all that, Don, you and I speak about, it could just be encapsulated. If it could be encapsulated in one thing, it could be just follow the money. Isn't that?
Yeah, well, that's true. But just get ready for this. Well, because you can be able to follow the money even better. We're talking about net zero 2050, but now we've got, for instance, the mining company's leader in Fortescue, Tuggy Forrest, he's nicknamed as, is the boss there, owner. He and others are talking about real zero. Now, they see money in that. They see the ability to make money in that somehow. I haven't worked the wiring diagram out yet, but yeah, we think we're just getting harangued and harassed with net zero, but we've got the next concept on the way called real zero.
And these guys, again, they are following the money, Don. He's not doing it for the kindness, out of the kindness of his heart, because he has got a solution for it.
Yeah,
and everything is going to be about electricity and everything. Everything is going to be electrified. I don't know where these guys seem to think they're going to get the electrons from.
Oh, that's the problem. And we can't talk about it quickly here, but energy density issue is the big one. And of course, you know, we know where the most bang for your buck comes from, and it's probably nuclear, but it's sort of the untouchable. And so we've got all this intermittent option stuff around us that we're putting all the money into, and still ain't giving us enough electrons to fuel the data centers and AI and all that good stuff that's coming down the line.
Very good stuff that's coming down the line.
Anyway.
Yes, Don?
I was just going to say, last thing quickly, those people that hung off the Fonterra building the other day, the Greenpeace activists, I mean, they've done these gimmicks before. They need to go to ground zero. Just get over it.
Or just get a chemistry lesson, you know?
Yeah.
Chemistry and physics, actually. Just chemistry will just give you that methane or CH4. The physics is always the underlying science that backs up this. Not social sciences, not communication sciences, and certainly not political sciences. Mm. Yeah. Physics. All right. That is not really very sexy stuff, but yeah, I'd love for those kids to go and get a lesson from maybe Tom Sheehan.
I don't. When I saw them, they weren't kids. They were seriously adult people in their boiler suits. were they dripping in oil? Would they have lots of nylon-y goods on them? I'm not sure. They probably had nylon rope. Don't know. And was that sign made out of
compostable?
Cotton? Yeah, bound to be hemp. It'll be hemp-based. Anyway, I'm taking the mickey. We need to carry on and get to our next guest, who is Bernadette Hunt from Fed Farmers South. And she's been in the news big time lately about the Court of Appeal decision that would pretty much say farmers of South and perhaps the whole country, because of precedence, needed a consent to farm.
Yeah. So Bernadette Hunt. Yeah. will be
next. Imagine the bureaucracy. Yeah, she'll be next.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. 2057 is the number, or you can email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. Back after a short break.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.